Welcome everyone to Comics in Conversation. My name is Jordan Calhoun and I'm here with my guest, filmmaker, journalist, educator, trailblazer, writer of Dynamite Comics' new series Shaft, David Walker. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you. It's good to be here. That intro makes me sound important. It's kind of, now I got to live up to it all.
Now you have a lot of expectations that you're living up to. People came to this podcast expecting to hear greatness. So, you know, no pressure or anything. No pressure at all.
All right. I'll take it easy and I'll bring the fire and the heat.
That's right. That's what I like to hear. So, I mean, with that introduction, I mean, man, it's a mouthful because there's so much that you've done so far in your career. So I would love to just start off hearing about how you got interested in filmmaking and journalism and all the media outlets that you've been touching on over the past several years. I mean, were you always interested in these things growing up, or how did they come about in your career?
Yes. I was a kid in the 70s raised on too much television, too many comic books, that sort of stuff. And that's always what I secretly dreamed of being, or maybe not even secretly dreamed of being. I wanted to be involved in the entertainment business in some capacity. I really wanted to write, and actually wanted to write and draw comics, but my drawing skills just never quite took off. And so, you know, I like everybody else, sort of messed around with the early part of my life, tried to find a career, and it just never quite came together. Started dabbling in film, started dabbling in writing, and kind of lucked out and got a job working at a newspaper. In the 90s, I started publishing my own zine, and that got a lot of attention, you know, because before there was the internet, before there was blogs, there were zines. And so that sort of led to a career in journalism that lasted for, oh man, over 10 years. But during that time, I never gave up on the more creative things that I wanted to do, like writing comics, working in film. So that those always sort of became, you know, the weekend hobbies. And then at some point I just hit an age where I was like, yo, if I want to do this, I got to get real, you know? And so I kind of had to leave the career behind and in essence, almost not really start over again, because I was already doing it. But really establishing myself.
Right. Okay, so during that decade, I wonder, were you enjoying being a journalist, or were you always looking down the line like, I'm doing this because, you know, it fell into my lap, or I worked hard to get it or whatever, but you always wanted to do the comics and do the more creative stuff, or were you content being a journalist for those 10 years?
Never once was I content being a journalist, not for a single second. Again, it was, you know, it was an opportunity that presented itself. And I remember one of my friends saying, you know, I said, you know, this newspaper wants to hire me to be a critic and to be a columnist. And I said, I don't know if I can do it. And he looked at me and he said, you know, the worst that can happen is they'll fire you. You know, so I took the job and I learned a lot. I got a lot out of it. I really, truly did. But, you know, at the end of the day, I was never that happy whether it was being a critic or being a reporter. I always knew what I wanted to do. But it was a good opportunity to pay the bills and just get a lot of experience. So, you know, I can't lie about that. In a lot of ways, I wish I'd gotten that job, you know, in my early to mid 20s, as opposed to my early 30s, so that I, you know, didn't spend the 30s in it. But, you know, hey, life doesn't always work out the way we want.
Right. It's interesting that you said, you know, when you grew up and you watched entirely too much TV, and that was what sort of inspired your interest in writing. Sometimes I think back to when I grew up, and I was definitely in the same boat. My brother and I watched entirely too many cartoons and too much TV, so much that I think about it now and I'm like, that was borderline irresponsible parenting, just how much TV that I watched. But then when you get older, and right now, I mean, I do my own share of writing, and when I think about it, there comes a point where you're like, actually, it wasn't that bad a thing. Like, I think we went through a significant phase in society where we were talking about how terrible it is for kids to watch TV, but I mean, entertainment media is evolved a really long way, and some of the television that we watch just really spurs creativity, and it I don't regret a lot of the TV that I was raised on growing up.
You know, neither do I, and same with movies. You know, the thing was I knew from a really early age that I wanted to be involved in some capacity, you know. And so I was watching stuff from a very critical standpoint really early on, like paying attention to, you know, I was that kid in high school who knew the name of cinematographers. You know what I'm saying? And to say that in terms of, like, again, you got to remember I was in high school in the early 80s. So it wasn't like you could go on to IMDb or something like that. It was like you just sort of paid attention to the credits of the movies, and it would be like, oh, this cat here, you know, Dean Semler, he shot this movie, he shot that other movie, you know. And most of my friends didn't get it, you know. Most people didn't get why I was excited when there was a Alfred Hitchcock retrospective when I was, I think, a sophomore in high school. And I was like, oh, I'll get to see all these, you know, Hitchcock movies on the big screen. And so I was always like really it was never homework for me, but it was always, you know, immersing myself in these worlds. Same thing with comics, really, really studying them and trying to understand the medium as best I could, trying to understand how to tell stories as best I could. So, you know, yeah, maybe I wasted a lot of my youth, but I hope it paid off. We'll see.
I would not consider that wasted. So you mentioned your break into journalism was that job that you feel like you somewhat lucked out on. What do you consider your big break in comics? So after that 10 years, what do you feel like was your big break when it came to being a writer and creating your own work?
Well, that's an even more bizarre kind of story. I live in Portland, Oregon, which is one town over from where Dark Horse Comics is, and so I knew a lot of people that worked at Dark Horse early on in the early days, and I. You know, right after high school, I went to the Joe Kubert School because I wanted to be an artist, comic book artist, and I failed miserably at that. But, you know, by the time I was 18 or 19, I actually knew people in the comic industry. Some of them I knew socially from conventions, but some I actually knew from, like, my time at the Kubert School. And so in one way or another, I was always connected to the comic industry. So I would... You know, friends who worked at Dark Horse would have a party, and I would go there, and then I'd be at a party with other folks from Dark Horse, and then eventually met people from, you know, at other publishing companies, other creators. And I started publishing my own zine in the 90s, and at that point, you still, you know, you could go to someplace like the San Diego Comic-Con, and there'd be a small press section, and there'd be a handful of zine publishers. It's not like it is now. And so I was always in that world, you know, and it was just kind of funny because people would look at me and they'd be like, oh, so, you know, what do you do in comics? And I was like, well, I just kind of hang out. You know, I'd written a couple short stories here and there. I self-published a few things, but I wasn't like in the heart of the industry. And then I just had some actually really good friends who were really well established in the industry, and they were encouraging me, you know, quit messing around. Like, just, you can do this, you know? And so that's sort of how it happened. I started doing some indie stuff with some of the guys that I knew, and just, it just sounds weird even as I'm telling the story, you know? But it was, you know, Brian Bendis and Greg Rucka are two really, really good friends of mine. And both of them for years were like, man, just do it. Just, you know, you're never going to break in at Marvel or DC. You're going to have to do some independent stuff first. And I was just kind of scared and like, oh, I don't, you know, can I really do this? I mean, I know I can edit a newspaper and I know I can be a reporter, but can I write comic books? And it was through the encouragement of them and some others that really sort of pushed me where I needed to go.
That's amazing. Rucka and Bendis are both amazing, by the way. So it's great just having that support network when you were getting started in your career and deciding whether you felt you could do it or not. That's awesome.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing is like I met Brian. He had been working on Ultimate Spider-Man like maybe a year at that point. I met him like in 2000, 2001, something like that. So it was about a year or two. Greg, I met him right when Whiteout first came out.
Uh-huh.
And so both of those guys were, you know, had been doing their indie stuff, but they weren't who they are now. And it wasn't just them. There was a lot of other people too that I like to name drop, you know, it was like plink. It's funny when someone like that is yelling at you and like literally yelling at you, telling you just to get off your butt and do it. And so that was just kind of that was it. And there was a lot of other people too. Bob Schreck, who was, used to be an editor at Dark Horse, used to be an editor at DC, was over at Oni. Bob has been friends of mine we've been friends for years, and in a lot of ways was really a mentor in helping me learn how to tell better stories, because I would run ideas by him and he would be like, you know, it's all right, but it's really not good enough to be a comic yet, you know. And so that really helped me sharpen my skills, because I started asking myself the same questions Bob would ask me when I would throw an idea out at him.
So you mentioned that the first time you tried as a comic artist, you said that you failed. What was that failure about? Why do you think you failed?
Part of it was laziness. I remember my first day at the Kubert School. There was the kid sitting immediately to my right was like one of the most amazing artists I'd ever seen. And then the guy sitting to my left could barely draw a stick figure. And I was like, okay, you know, which side of the spectrum am I on? And I think the biggest name to come out of that, the class that I was part of, and I never even finished my first year there. I got into some trouble and was asked to leave, but is Rags Morales. And so, you know, that was like and Rags was like, he was the man, even like on the first day, you know, people are looking, comparing portfolios and you're looking at his stuff and it's going, okay, wait a minute. For me anyway, I was like, I don't belong here. Mm-hmm. You know, I never got past that feeling like I didn't belong there in that world. And, you know, when I was young, I was like 17, 18 years old. So there was a lot of insecurity. And then on top of that insecurity was that the arrogance, the hubris of youth. And then I was kind of lazy, man. You know, I mean, like I wanted to be an artist, but I didn't want to put in the work. And whereas with writing never seemed like work to me. So it wasn't, you know, one day when I was like, oh yeah, I know writing is what I'm going to do. And it just, you know, even if I have trouble structuring a story or coming up with the right word, it's not the same as not being able to draw a hand, you know, or getting your perspective wrong on a building or something.
You mentioned the insecurity when you were looking around your class and you'd see everyone else's portfolio and you felt like you didn't belong. When do you feel that you shook that off in your career, or did you ever shake that off? Like, how do you feel when you look out at the landscape of comic book writers and creators now? Do you ever get that feeling like, oh, I am on par with everyone here, or oh, I am nowhere close?
Oh man, I'll get in trouble if I answer this honestly.
Hey, this is what we're here for.
To be honest, and this is, you know, especially if there's anybody listening to this who's you know, quote unquote, aspiring to be a writer or an artist, I'll tell you this much, that the insecurity never goes away, right? There's that insecurity is going to follow you everywhere. It's just you sort of learn how to get used to it. It's like that dog that's always sort of like biting at your heels, you know, the chihuahua or something. I do look at other comics and I read them, and sometimes I'll read them and think to myself, you know, I could write better than this. And then there's other stuff that I read and I think, nope, there's no way I'll ever be this good. You know, or watching a film, I saw that movie Birdman recently, which I absolutely loved. And I thought to myself, I never would have even thought of this movie, you know, and then that sort of stuff inspires me. I know that I'm not the best writer I'm ever going to be. I'm still working on it. That, like, I'm always chasing after that sort of phantom. But I feel pretty comfortable. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to compare myself to Bendis or Rucka or Kelly Sue DeConnick or Matt Fraction or any of the people that whose work I really, truly respect. But I aspire to be like them. But then I also know that I have strengths that they might not have. And so it's very important to me, especially, you know, when, you know, and we can get into this if you want to, especially when you're, you know, if you're a black person, a person of color or a woman or whatever, if you're part of the marginalized and oppressed in this country and you're trying to make it in an industry where there's very few people that look like you or think like you, you got to learn how to cope with your insecurities. Because the insecurity about your talent is just part of a bigger insecurity. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Actually, let's most definitely climb into that topic. We talked about it at length with Jerry Kraft, and we had a good conversation talking about when he was first breaking into comics and trying to garner support for his comics that were highlighting characters of color and yeah. People's reactions to it and him navigating that space. What was that like for you?
It, you know, it's funny that you mentioned Jerry, because Jerry and I are really, I love him dearly. You know, he's a very good friend of mine. And we've talked about this sort of stuff before. And, you know, for me, I grew up in a small town, in a predominantly white town, where my family, we weren't the only family of color, but we all lived like all the black families lived like on two different blocks, and we all knew each other, right? And so I grew up in an environment where I knew what it was always like to be one of the only black folks in the room, to be one of the only black folks, you know, on the baseball team, whatever. And that sort of thing can either make or break you, you know. I know other folks that didn't deal with it as well as I did, but I had really strong upbringing, and so it prepared me for it. It prepared me for being, you know, in comics when, you know, you're at a convention or something like that and you're surrounded by a lot of white folks or you're trying to sell your product or whatever. And the thing is like what I know, and this is a lot what I really got from my family growing up, is like I know that I've earned my place in the room. I may have insecurities at times, but like I know that I'm a pretty good writer, you know. So it's like even if I have doubts in myself, if somebody comes at me with their doubts about me, it's like I come out swinging. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. And just going back a little bit, we mentioned positive and negative reactions that you can have seeing other people's amazing work, right?
Yeah.
You can look at someone's work, and it's really interesting how you can see, let's say you watch an amazing movie or you read a great comic or see an amazing TV show. You can look at that and be discouraged and say, oh, I could never make something that good. And I think that happens with all of us, it definitely happens with me, where I'll look at something and go, wow, I'll have the reaction that you had to Birdman. Like, wow, I would have never thought of this, or I could have never done something this good. Or you can look at it, maybe if you're having a good day or feeling especially optimistic, and say, wow, this is inspiring. I'm going to keep working towards it until I can get that. Like, sort of that mindset where you are fixed in saying that I am this level of a writer or I am this level of a creative versus what you said, where you said, you know, you're not the best writer that you're going to be. So you can look at it as an area for growth, and you could look at any work sort of in a positive light saying, maybe I would not have thought of that, but I'm still on that path. Like I'm still growing towards the best writer that I'm going to be.
And that's it. That's, you know, every time I write something, I'm giving it my all, and I'm hoping it'll be the best it will be, and I'm hoping that people will be entertained by it. But I also know that, you know, 5 years from now, if I'm looking back on something that I wrote today, but I'm looking at it 5 years from now, and I'm thinking, this is the best thing I've ever written, this is the best thing I'll ever write, then there's something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, because you should always be striving to be better you know, than you are in the moment. And but that again, that a lot of that takes patience too, you know, and patience is unfortunately not a lot of people have it, and usually you don't get it until you get older anyway. So
yeah, patience is hard.
It is. It's very
patience hard. Is just downright hard, and that sort of ties in hand to hand with perseverance, which is also yep. hard. Two things that seems you 100% need in this industry.
And in life, to be honest with you, right. there's never, I mean, my grandfather used to always say to me, he would just say, you know, no one ever said it was going to be easy, boy, you know, and I would get mad at him for saying it, but it, you know, in a lot of ways, it toughened me up. It wasn't like it was abusive or anything like that. It was a straight up fact, you know, there's always going to be someone out there who runs faster than you, who hits harder than you, who thinks faster than you, and you just better hope that you're never competing against them or you're going to lose, you know?
Yeah. And also, I think it's important understanding that losing or failing isn't the worst thing in the world. I think you mentioned earlier where you mentioned something along the lines of once you realize that you can fail, like,
oh yeah,
once you accept that, once you accept what the worst case scenario is, then it's sometimes it's not as scary.
You've got to learn from everything. And sometimes it takes days or weeks or months or years to find the lesson in something. Failure is what happens when you do nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
You can look at the teams that are, you know, playing against each other in the Super Bowl, and the team that loses, you go, oh, well, they failed, they lost. And it's like, well, it's not like they didn't try. You know, not everybody's going to win. Not everyone's going to be a success. But it's how do you define success? How do you define it on your own terms, not the terms of somebody else? You know, I can look at another writer and go, oh, I want to be just like that other person, but I'm never going to be that other person. I'm still going to be me. And so the success of, you know, you pick a writer, you know, in comics right now, I don't care who it is. If I'm looking at them and measuring myself to them, then I'm a fool. You know, I mean, how many people in comics right now spent, you know, more than 10 years of their life working as a journalist? Not many, you know, so it's like,
while you may have,
yeah, you were on your own path doing your thing, doing your mini comics or whatever. I was, you know, in Park City covering, you know, the Sundance Film Festival and interviewing filmmakers. You know, that's what I was doing. That was my job. And I got a lot out of it, so I can't complain.
So let's talk about Shaft a little bit.
Sure.
How did you become the writer for Shaft?
it's one of those stories that it actually goes back years ago. It was something that I'd always wanted to do. I always thought, wow, a Shaft comic would be cool. When Darwin Cook started doing his Donald Westlake adaptations of the Parker novels a few years back, I was like, man, somebody really needs to do this with Shaft. And at the time I was thinking it needs to be someone who writes and draws. But I don't draw. So it didn't really like click in my head that it should be me writing it, you know?
Why did you feel it had to be someone who wrote and drew?
I don't know. Maybe because those Parker books look so good. And maybe it was because I felt like it just needed somebody who had the same level of passion that I did, but could also draw. Or maybe just because I was insecure and didn't want to admit, you know, there's a whole host of we could spend hours, like, you know, psychoanalyzing that. And then a couple of years ago, I was like, you know, this is something I've been wanting to do for a long time. Why am I not pursuing it? So I did some investigating. I got Ernest Tidyman, who is the writer who created Shaft, wrote the first novel. I got in touch with his widow. Some dialogue going with her, struck up a relationship with her. She introduced me to the agency that reps her late husband's estate, started talking to them. telling them what my, you know, my most basic plans were, and they were like, hey, we totally love to do this. And then it was like, okay, I guess now I got to find a publisher. And so, you know, I looked around at the comics game and I was like, okay, who's doing a lot of licensing? And more importantly, what are they licensing? You know, so, you know, Dark Horse has a lot of licenses, but it's, you know, well, they just lost Star Wars, but it's, you know, Aliens and Predator and that sort of stuff. And IDW has licenses, but it's a lot of it's like Star Trek and things like that. Boom. Everybody's got their licenses, but I was like, Dynamite was the one that really struck me as being okay. They're doing some stuff that, you know, it's some R-rated material. It's not necessarily meant for younger readers, and let's see how they feel about it. So I approached them and said, are you guys interested in doing Shaft? And they said yes. And I said, well, I know the people who have the rights and I'm interested in writing it, so let's see what we can do. And that took a little over a year to happen.
When the dust finally settled and you knew that you were going to be the writer for the Shaft comic, did it scare the shit out of you having like an iconic character in your hands?
Yeah, and it still does. You know, I'm not going to lie. It's not as scary as, say, whether it's if we're talking comics, I could use a character like Batman or Spider-Man, right? If we're talking pop culture in general, we could use James Bond. Those characters scare me more simply because their canons are much larger. They're more ingrained in the public consciousness. But the people who remember Shaft and know Shaft and love that character, like, he means a lot to them. And he means a lot to me. So it really did terrify me. And more important, probably the most important aspect of it was, and this isn't to knock anybody who's doing anything else, but like I didn't want it to be Black Dynamite. And I love the show Black Dynamite. You know, the Sean Thomas is working on it and Carl Jones is working on it. And it's some incredibly talented people. Some of them I know personally. And I really love that show. I enjoyed the movie. I like the comic. But I was like, I don't want to do Black Dynamite. I want to do something serious. I want to do something that's really hard hitting, that doesn't have even come close to having that level of sense of humor. And so, and there was this fear on my part that that's what people would want. Like, they'd be like, oh, well, Shaft wasn't funny enough. And, oh, his afro wasn't big enough, or his bell bottoms weren't big enough. And it's like, yeah, but that's not what it's about. These are, you know, these are detective stories. These are crime thrillers. And that's what they're supposed to be. They're not meant to be a satire or even necessarily an homage to another era. They're just supposed to be evocative of that other era.
How did it feel after you wrote the first issue, which was a great issue, by the way? I really, really enjoyed it. How did you feel after you wrote that issue? It came out, and did you sit on your computer and read reviews for it, or did you stay far away from, you know, what people's reaction were to it? Some people feel different ways about receiving feedback from their work. Did you dive in and just do a search for every single review? Or did you, you know, sort of wipe your hands of it and said it is what it is, and then continue the next, you know, the next issue?
It's somewhere in between the two. If someone tagged me on, you know, on Twitter or Facebook or sent me a link to a review, I read it because I figured, well, these are probably decent reviews, you know?
Yeah, if they're sending it to me, they're probably not smearing my name through the mud.
Yeah, I have not done any sort of Google search looking for negative reviews. And, you know, and I never read comments or anything anywhere. So
that's a dangerous thing.
Yeah, but I, you know, I definitely have been aware of some of the positive reviews. And it's really you know, it's very gratifying, you know, and it's interesting because there's a lot of people who are like, well, who is this guy? You know, we've heard of Shaft, but we've never heard of the writer. You know, where did he come from? And now the thing is like, okay, well, how are you guys going to react to issue number two? You know, issue one, people liked it, but there's still five more issues to go in this story arc, and all six issues are written. They're all turned in. So we're ahead of the game. So I know what's coming next. I'm not like worrying about what I'm writing next. Now I'm worrying about like, well, how will people receive it? How will they respond to it?
What's next for you after Shaft?
That's a really good question. You know, hopefully more Shaft for one thing, you know, because you can never get enough Shaft. There's, again, I'm talking to a couple publishers about several different projects. And so hopefully one or both of those will come through. I've got a book coming out from IDW in March called The Army of Dr. Moreau, which is, it had been a digital series through Monkey Brain Comics, and IDW is collecting the whole thing into a trade paperback. And so I'll be pushing that come March. And then Robert Love, who's an artist that I've worked with in the past, him and I are – we have two separate projects that we're developing right now. When one of them, we've already talked to one publisher, and the deal they offered us just didn't sit well with us, so we turned it down. And him and I are on this vibe of like, well, we really want to do an all ages book. And by all ages, I don't necessarily mean something that's rated G, you know, Archie Comics sort of thing, but something that, you know, kids around the age of 10 to 13 can really get into. And if adults like it, that's fine too. But, I think especially for Black kids, there's nothing for them, period, or very little for them in comics. And I think a lot of Black creators are creating some great stuff, but it's not necessarily stuff appropriate for a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old. And that's who needs – if we're going to inspire the next generation, we've got to get them wanting to read stuff and get them excited about things. So Robert and I we've got two different projects, and we're sort of figuring it out. Like, okay, are we going to, you know, go through Kickstarter, or are we going to do it ourselves? But the next thing I would do after Shaft, or if it's not something that's like at Marvel or DC, is really something that's all ages. And again, when I say all ages, I mean like, you know, not rated G necessarily, but, you know, definitely, you know, in the PG range.
Just before we get ready to wrap up, just a few more questions I wanted to ask. One is for aspiring writers, and we alluded to this earlier. A lot of people who listen to this podcast are obviously people who are interested in comics, but are content creators themselves and want to do their own comics or plan on doing that as a career. What advice would you give to someone who wants to follow in your career path?
You know, it's going to sound almost like a cliche, because it seems like it's the same old advice that everybody gives. But, you know, if you want to be a writer or you want to be an artist, you need to work on your craft really every day. And a lot of people will say, oh, I'm too busy. And to which I respond, well, then you don't want it bad enough. You know, there's 24 hours in a day. If you're working 8 hours a day, and then you sleep another eight, you know, okay, so that's 16. That still leaves you with 8 hours. So spend an hour of that instead of watching TV or playing a video game or on Facebook. Spend an hour of that practicing your craft, or maybe 2 hours or 3 hours. You got to give yourself over to it as much as you can. That's first and foremost. If writing comics is what you want to do, yeah, you've got to read a lot of comics for sure, but you got to read other things too. You got to watch movies. You've got to read books. You need to understand how story itself works, and really get an idea for the craft of storytelling, because comic books are just a medium, but they're a medium of story. And you know, I'll read a comic book and I'll be like, every now and then I'm like, has this person ever read anything other than a comic book? Because, you know, I can write comics, I can write novels, I can write screenplays, and I can write, you know, a straight journalism piece. And if you can't, you know, you need to be flexible, and you need to understand that just because you love something does not mean it should be the only thing you immerse yourself in.
David, how can fans support your work, your website, Tumblr, any social media?
Yeah, you know, I'm out there. I've got I don't update my blog nearly enough. That's badassmofo.com, BADAZZMOFO.com. I'm on Twitter at DavidWalker1201. There's a David F. Walker page on Facebook. You know, the thing that they can do best is, and especially if, when we're talking about, like, you know, whether you want to call us black nerds or black geeks or black fans or whatever you want to call black enthusiasts, I think one of the most important things that we can do is call attention to the fact that there isn't as much stuff out there that we might want in terms of content, but to support the content that's out there. So it's okay to tweet about whatever happened on, you know, last week's episode of Gotham or whatever TV show you watch or whatever comic you read, that the mainstream entertainment machines are putting out. But there's some great comics out there, you know, like a comic like Concrete Park that Dark Horse is putting out. And it's really about telling other people about it. Like, I can't tell you how many people I've gotten emails from that are like, I didn't know there was a Shaft comic out. And it's like, well, you know, okay, now you do. Good. Thank you. But it's through the support of, you know, the social networking, social media support on Twitter and Tumblr and Facebook, that's how the word gets out there. And that's really all you can do, you know, is just hope that people put some positive energy into what you're doing as opposed to the haters. And there's a lot of people who just, that's what they enjoy doing is hating, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Sort of doing your work regardless.
And I always tell people, I'm like, hey, you can knock my work all you want. You can say what you want to say about me, but unless you're willing to go toe to toe with me with a folding metal chair, you better watch it, you know, cause I'll take you out in the parking lot and you know, put my foot up in your ass.
This so. The other way. We can do this one way or we can do this the other way.
Exactly. My favorite line from the Mac is, you know, we can settle this like gentlemen.
Or we can get into some gangsta shit.
Business. Yeah, exactly. So.
And that is the perfect note to wrap this up on, David.
Thank you very much, sir.
Oh, thank you so much for being on Comics in Conversation. Wow. Everyone, go out and buy Shaft. And man, keep up the great work. Thanks again for taking the time to be on the podcast. You definitely have supporters over at Black Nerd Problems, and keep it up. It's absolutely amazing. Follow David Walker on Twitter at DavidWalker1201, right?
Yep, that's it.
David Walker.
And anytime you want me back on the show, let me know. I'll get my time zones right and I won't mess it up.
Most definitely, most definitely. And if ever it gets messed up, you best believe I'll just be waiting for you the very next day. This has been Comics in Conversation, everyone. I'm your host, Jordan Calhoun. You can follow me at Jordan M. Calhoun on Twitter or Black Nerd Problems on everywhere. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, everything else. Everyone, have a great night. Thank you, David.
Thank you.